Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Good morning. Breaking overnight, unexpected boost. The head of the CDC, in a stunning move, overruling her own agency overnight, greenlighting a third dose of Pfizer's vaccine for a much larger group than recommended. The shot now approved for at-risk workers, including doctors, nurses, and teachers, not just the elderly and vulnerable. What's behind the surprise decision? With the first shots going in arms today, we're live with the latest. Super soaker, heavy rain up and down the East Coast, triggering a new round of flooding and damage. What Al says about the weekend on tap straight ahead. Supermarket shooting, the terrifying attack inside a Tennessee grocery store, leaving two people dead and more than a dozen others injured.
The most horrific event that's occurred in Collierville history.
This morning, what police are revealing about the victims and the suspected gunman. Manhunt. The FBI issues an arrest warrant for Gabby Petito's fiance, accusing Brian Laundrie of a crime after her death. What the warrant could mean to the search just ahead. Fear of flying. The nation's flight attendants come to Congress with an impassioned plea. Do something to rein in violent and unruly passengers.
He said, N-word, I don't have to listen to a damn thing you say.
Why the people on the front line say the friendly skies have never been so dangerous. Those stories plus, they'll take Manhattan.
It's wonderful to be back.
Inside Harry and Meghan's first public trip together since their palace exit, and the royal ripples being felt on both sides of the pond. Today, Friday, September 24th, 2021.
From NBC News, this is Today with Savannah Guthrie and Hoda Kotb. From Studio 1A in Rockefeller Plaza.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. Welcome to Today. Nice to have you with us on a Friday morning.
Yeah, and it is a busy one. We want to get right to the breaking news overnight on Pfizer's booster shot. The director of the CDC officially signing off on that extra dose for millions of Americans.
But in a highly unusual move, she went further than the recommendations from the CDC's own panel of advisors, siding with the FDA and including people at high risk of COVID because of their jobs. NBC national correspondent Miguel Almaguer has the latest on this twist. Miguel, good morning.
Savannah, good morning. At this very hour, the president is at the White House addressing the COVID crisis, talking specifically about booster shots and how important they will be for Americans to get them. He is also discussing the need for the unvaccinated to get vaccinated to help end this pandemic. All of this comes as Dr. Rochelle Walensky's recommendations, for the most part, fall in line with the CDC's safety committee. But as you mentioned, she did add one group that was rejected, allowing frontline healthcare workers and other high-risk employees like teachers to also qualify for boosters. And those extra shots could start going into arms right away.
Overnight, healthcare workers becoming the latest Americans to qualify for a booster. In a highly unusual decision, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky overruling one recommendation rejected by a panel of advisors. Walensky saying those frontline workers and others at high risk for catching COVID because of their jobs can now also receive their third dose of Pfizer's vaccine. They join those 65 and over, residents of long-term care facilities, people 50 to 64 years old with underlying conditions, and some Americans 18 to 49 with chronic health problems who can get a booster 6 months after their second dose. Of the roughly 100 million Americans who are fully vaccinated with Pfizer, well over 11 million can now immediately get a booster.
The decision today is critical because it's answering a question all Americans are asking: who should get boosters and when?
After weeks of booster confusion and the initial news they wouldn't qualify, essential workers like Regina Hartley, an elementary school librarian, can now get a shot of added protection.
Sometimes I feel like we can't be our best if we're worrying about, you know, what we might catch from a student in our school or from another teacher.
With over 180 million Americans fully inoculated, there's still no clear booster timeline for adults under 65 vaccinated with Pfizer or the 45% of Americans inoculated with Moderna or Johnson & Johnson. The staggered rollout of boosters will happen at pharmacies, clinics, and doctor's offices. Some healthcare providers say they're already being pressured to offer doses to those who don't qualify.
Many people are asking why they don't have that opportunity already.
This morning, the battle over boosters still underway as many seek an extra shot of protection and others face a dose of frustration.
When it comes to boosters for the public, experts simply think the data isn't there. Despite the Delta variant, they say the vast majority of Americans are still protected by their original vaccines. Protection from hospitalization does not appear to wane dramatically. Savannah, back to you in New York. Savannah.
That work continues. Miguel, thank you very much.
Another big story this morning. We're talking about the weather. Millions of people in the Mid-Atlantic to New England, they're dealing with soaking rain overnight. We had some here this morning. Al, what's the latest?
Well, guys, this is Staten Island, and it is like rivers out. This scene was repeated, stretching from Washington, D.C., and now it's going to be moving up into Boston. As you can see, we've got a flood watch right now for parts of New England. As this system, it's a slow-moving cold front, bringing heavy rain from just off the Long Island shore all the way on up into New England today. And we've got a risk of severe weather as well. Wind gusts of up to 60 miles per hour, isolated tornado possible, at least the hail threat very low. But this slow moving front starts to push off the coast today. Heaviest rain will be for New England, but it's going to kind of stall right there. And then there's a second front coming in that's going to put a squeeze play in here. So that second weaker front will move across Lake Erie and Lake Ontario today. So some light rain for them. But the heaviest rain today is going to be from Bangor all the way down to Providence, Boston, and the east end of Long Island, then out of here, and much nicer weather and cooler weather coming into the Northeast and New England. Guys?
All right, Al. Thank you. Let's move on now to that deadly investigation into that mass shooting. A busy grocery store in Tennessee. A gunman opening fire inside of a Kroger near Memphis, killing one person and injuring at least 12 others before police believe he took his own life. NBC's Shaquille Brewster is at the scene with the latest. Hey, Shaq, good morning.
Hi there, Hoda. Well, many of the wounded are recovering from some serious injuries this morning after a gunman walked into this Kroger and opened fire. Investigators overnight executing search warrants at undisclosed locations as they look to see whether the shooter was an employee who was recently fired.
This morning, a terrifying mass shooting sending shockwaves through a Memphis suburb.
Multiple subjects down at the rear of Kroger.
A gunman opening fire Thursday inside this Kroger grocery store in broad daylight, leaving one dead and at least 12 others injured. The victim identified by the town's vice mayor as Olivia King. Her son writing on Facebook that he prays God might have mercy on the soul of the person who committed this terrible crime.
The most horrific event that's occurred in Carville history.
Witnesses describing moments of sheer panic.
I was just thinking, oh, I'm going to die.
All I heard was gunshot.
Brignetta Dickerson, a veteran Kroger employee, says the shooter followed her and a group of others to the back of the store.
He shot one of my coworkers in the head, and then he shot a customer in the stomach.
Authorities first received a call about an active shooter around 1:30. Local police and SWAT teams responded instantly. Frightened employees hid in offices and store freezers. One employee rescued from the roof.
We've accounted for everyone.
According to police, the shooter, who has not yet been publicly identified, died at the scene, likely from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Several law enforcement officials telling NBC News authorities are now investigating whether the gunman was fired from his job at the store Thursday morning. The victims rushed to nearby hospitals where some remain in critical condition. Thursday's tragedy, not the first shooting at a Kroger supermarket. In March, 10 people, including a police officer, were killed after a gunman opened fire at a Kroger-owned King Superstore in Boulder, Colorado. This morning, another community shattered by yet another mass shooting.
Just hoping everyone, you know, is able to get through this. It'll be tough.
Yesterday, the chief said police believe the gunman acted alone, and this store will remain closed as the investigation continues. Hoda, back to you.
Wow, Shaq, so sad. All right, thank you. Thank you.
And now to the crisis at the southern border this morning. That makeshift camp of Haitian migrants continues to shrink, with U.S. officials ramping up removals. But another camp is now growing in size just across the river in Mexico. NBC's Guad Venegas joins us with a firsthand look at the conditions there. Hi, Guad. Good morning.
Savannah, good morning. Hundreds of migrants are stuck in this makeshift camp after Mexican authorities surrounded the area. Those officers trying to convince the Haitians to relocate to shelters outside of this border town.
Prayers and hope of a miracle for these Haitians stuck in limbo, some fleeing back into Mexico, fearing deportation back to Haiti. Mexican officers now blocking the river to stop anyone else from crossing into Texas. Robert is Haitian American and traveled from New York with supplies.
Some people get whipped, some people die. Like, it's very hard.
He's helping migrants like Jocelyn, who've decided to stay in Mexico.
He says he's got strength. He wants to work.
Across the border in Texas, the Del Rio migrant camp continues to shrink this morning. Homeland Security officials say 3,100 migrants remain there. Still unclear how many migrants have been released into the U.S. to seek asylum. DHS officials tell NBC News that number is in the thousands. And officials say nearly 1,950 migrants have been deported to Haiti since Sunday. That surge in deportations has prompted Daniel Foote, the U.S. Special Envoy to Haiti, to resign in protest, calling the Biden administration's decision to deport Haitian migrants inhumane and counterproductive. The State Department saying the ambassador mischaracterized the circumstances of his resignation. The administration also announcing Border Patrol agents will no longer use horses at the Del Rio camp, following a backlash over these images that appear to show agents on horseback using their reins to block Haitian migrants from entering the U.S. The White House says it's met with civil rights leaders about the incident, still under investigation.
We feel those images are horrible and horrific. There is an investigation the president certainly supports, overseen by the Department of Homeland Security, which he has conveyed will happen quickly.
Now, reports from the southern border say that hundreds of Haitians are crossing from Guatemala into Mexico daily, with the Mexican government increasing operations attempting to stop the flow to the border. Savannah.
All right, Guad Venegas at the border for us. Guad, thank you very much.
A lot more to get to. Craig joins the table, including a new development in the Gabby Petito case.
Yeah, Hoda, Savannah, good morning. Good morning to you as well. The FBI has now issued an arrest warrant for Gabby's fiancé, Brian Laundrie, announcing it is connected to his actions after the 22-year-old's death. This, as the manhunt for him enters its seventh day, with police now treating the Laundrie family home as an active crime scene. NBC's Katie Beck continues to follow the story for us. She's in Florida once again. Katie, good morning.
Good morning, Craig. The FBI stepping up their search efforts to find Brian Laundrie, thanking the public for valuable tips, encouraging them to send more, saying no piece of information is too small to help their investigation.
This morning, the nationwide search for Brian Laundrie picking up steam. Authorities now armed with a federal warrant for his arrest. The FBI says Laundrie is wanted for use of unauthorized access devices. According to court documents, Laundrie used an unauthorized debit card and PIN number in late August and knowingly and with intent to defraud withdrew $1,000 or more from a Wyoming ATM. The Laundrie family's attorney saying in a statement, "It is my understanding that the arrest warrant for Brian Laundrie is related to activities occurring after the death of Gabby Petito and not related to her actual demise." Laundrie's parents were seen Thursday driving away from their home. Their son and Gabby Petito left on a cross-country trip from her parents' home in Long Island, New York on July 2nd. The city of Moab, Utah announced it's launching an independent investigation into the way officers handled this August 12th incident, captured on body cam between Gabby and Brian.
We'd have been fighting all morning and he would have let me in the car before.
According to an affidavit, the responding officer described it as a mental health crisis, not a domestic assault. The city saying it's unaware of any breach of policy at this time. Laundrie returned home to Florida without Petito September 1st. On Sunday, her body was discovered in a remote area of Wyoming's Bridger-Teton National Forest. The coroner calling it a homicide, but not revealing a cause of death. Laundrie's parents told police their son went for a hike last week at the 25,000-acre Carlton Reserve near their Florida home. Federal, state, and local officials have searched for days using drones, canine units, ATVs, and underwater dive teams.
This is a tremendous mass of land. The more people, the more effective we are.
While the search continues for Laundrie, supporters gather at vigils and growing memorials for Gabby.
It's just heartbreaking. I feel so bad for the family.
In the meantime, Katie, there's another apparent piece of information. One of Gabby Petito's friends said that Laundrie is equipped to go off-grid, that he'd actually done this before and been gone for I don't remember what period of time. But the area where they're searching is obviously challenging. What are officials saying about that?
Yeah, Hoda, that report said it was 3 months he spent on the Appalachian Trail, a similar survival-style trek. But survival experts say even someone who is prepared would need to be well-equipped and well-prepared to endure these elements, the heat, the humidity. Obviously, having a way to boil water and have shelter out here is not the easiest. In contention also with gators and snakes, keep in mind the swampland, 75% of it is underwater. So even for someone who is a trained survivalist, this would be a real struggle.
Yeah, if in fact he is still in Florida, you know, he could actually be somewhere else. Who really knows? All right, Katie, thank you.
All right, we want to switch gears now. Let's get our first check of the weather. A lot of Northeasterners waking up to wetness.
That's right.
Rain. I was about to say wet rain.
And then you realize all rain was wet.
I didn't sleep great last night.
This isn't getting any better.
No, it isn't.
So I'm just walking away.
Just take it away, friend.
Gonna come over here.
I give up.
And look over here. No, stay here.
Yeah.
We are looking at some showers now coming up out of Mexico into the southwest. We're also watching another front. We told you about this one making its way through the upper Midwest. And here's the main front pushing off the coast. So all in all, things fairly quiet. Today, there's no real severe weather. We are looking at cooler than average temperatures in the Northeast. That heavy rain making its way into the New England area, but cooler than average through the Mississippi and Ohio River valleys. Here comes that front, and all in all, not a bad day today. And that is your latest weather, guys.
All right, Al, thank you. Just ahead, inside the nation's ongoing air rage crisis, from alcohol-fueled name-calling to fights in the aisles over masks, airline employees say bad passenger behavior getting worse. And now they are turning to Congress for help. We'll have that story.
Plus, the family's hoping the spotlight on high-profile cases like the Gabby Petito investigation will finally bring much-needed attention to their missing loved ones. We'll have that story, but first, this is Today on NBC.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/today. Just go to Indeed.com/today right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/today. Conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Oh, Friday morning. With the eyes of the golfing world on Wisconsin, Whistling Straits Golf Club, to be precise. That's where this morning's Ryder Cup is getting underway. We're going to check in with our friend Mike Tirico, who will lead NBC sports coverage all weekend. You know, Carson was trying to get there, and the rain got in the way, but Carson will be here with us.
He'll be here, and we're going to talk to Steph Curry a little bit later.
Yes, be good.
Let's get to your headlines at 7:30. We'll start in Washington, where the House approved a bipartisan defense policy bill yesterday, despite opposition from a conservative wing of the Republican Party. Lawmakers voted overwhelmingly in favor of the $768 billion defense measure after debating hundreds of amendments for several hours. That legislation authorizes spending levels and guides Pentagon policy. The House bill will now need to be reconciled with the Senate's version before it heads to the president's desk.
Dramatic new video shows the intensity of a wildfire burning in the Sequoia National Forest. This video was shot by a survey team driving through the so-called Windy Fire northeast of Bakersfield, California. So far, those flames have scorched more than 49,000 acres. Residents living in the area have had to have been evacuated. The fire, only 6% contained.
The oldest known human footprints in North America have been discovered in New Mexico. Scientists identified approximately 60 fossilized footprints.
Wow.
They were buried in layers of gypsum soil at White Sands National Park. The U.S. Geological Survey estimates the prints date back 23,000 years to the Ice Age. That means that humans were living there several thousand years earlier than once believed. The findings were published Thursday in the Journal of Science.
Fascinating. All right. Now to a very serious problem when it comes to flying, and that problem apparently getting worse.
Yeah, we've been telling you about this for a while, but flight attendants once again are pleading for help, saying unruly and in some cases violent passengers have become so problematic, they need Congress to help get control of the reality they are facing every single day. Some really shocking testimony, and they laid it out just how ugly things are getting.
NBC's Kristen Dahlgren joins us with that story. Hey, Kristen, good morning.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Remember that old slogan, fly the friendly skies? Well, that certainly wouldn't apply in these cases. In many cases, fueled by this, that mask mandate to try and keep people from spreading COVID. So now flight attendants are asking the federal government to step in and settle things down.
Passengers fighting in the aisles, even rolling on the floor. Out of control, often drunk or angry about mask mandates. This man had to be duct taped to his seat. In a recent survey, 85% of flight attendants said they have witnessed unruly behavior this year.
We simply cannot accept this as the new normal.
In a virtual hearing before Congress, flight attendants described just how ugly it can get.
The specific incident that I will share today is not easy to talk about.
American Airlines flight attendant Teddy Andrews recounting the racist abuse he faced from a passenger refusing to wear a mask.
I asked, sir, would you please put your mask on? It must be covering both your mouth and nose. He looked at me, and I will not repeat the epithet he used. He said, N-word, I don't have to listen to a damn thing you say. I know I don't deserve to be spoken to like this under any circumstance.
The Federal Aviation Administration reports more than 4,300 cases of unruly, sometimes dangerous behavior in 2021. More than 3,000 of those involve passengers refusing to comply with the FAA mask mandate. Passengers can face jail time and even be banned from an airline for life. Fines of up to $45,000 per incident already total more than $1 million this year. Now flight attendants are calling on Congress for stricter enforcement, bans on to-go cups of alcohol, and greater coordination between the airlines and FAA to spot problem passengers, which could come in the form of a no-fly database.
The vast majority of people just want to follow the rules. They want a safe, uneventful flight. We need messaging from leadership that is consistent about what we're doing together to face this crisis and how we can come together and support each other in this moment.
It's just so despicable, Kristen, some of this behavior. You mentioned some passengers can face jail time, but how often does that really even happen?
Right. Good question, Savannah. And it is rare because it's usually left up to the local authorities. And so one thing flight attendants are really pushing for is for the Justice Department to get involved. And later today, it will be airlines up on the Hill. They will be weighing in on what they'd like to see happen.
All right, Kristen, thank you very much. Coming up next, a question a lot of us have been asking, why do we know Gabby Petito's name, but not hundreds of others who also disappeared in the very same state?
We're going to take a closer look at the growing calls from families demanding equal attention for every missing person case. That's right after this.
We're We're back. It is 7:39 this morning on In Depth Today. The attention on the Gabby Petito case that's ignited really a larger conversation.
Yeah, a lot of people are asking, why is it that cases involving missing people of color don't receive the same amount of attention?
Yeah, that's the question a lot of folks are asking. And NBC's Antonia Hilton is here with a little bit more on that. Antonia, good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning. While the nation has been riveted by the Gabby Petito case, studies show cases of young white women are just a small minority of missing person cases in this country. But those involving people of color typically don't receive the same focus or resources. Now their families and advocates are speaking out to bring more attention to this disparity and hopes of finding their loved ones.
As the search for Brian Laundrie intensifies, and the loss of Gabby Petito is mourned nationwide, there's growing outrage that the attention being paid to her case isn't given to those of missing people of color.
We don't get the same level of urgency.
David Robinson's son, Daniel, is a 24-year-old geologist who disappeared after work one day this past June in Arizona. Police found his car in a ravine, but 3 months have passed and there's been no sign of him. Robinson says police are making little progress, and he's had to hire an independent investigator.
Why do you think that is, that cases like your son's go unheard?
As much as I really hate to say this, and sometimes I think race is a factor.
In 2020, more than 500,000 people were reported missing, nearly 40% of them people of color, and they're disappearing at disproportionate rates. While Black Americans make up 13% of the U.S. population, they account for 35% of missing persons cases.
Automatically, law enforcement assume that these children, they're runaways, these adults, that they are involved in some sort of criminal activity. So they're basically just, you know, swept under the rug.
Former law enforcement officer Derica Wilson started the Black and Missing Foundation after seeing too many of these cases ignored.
I can roll off Chandra Levy, Natalie Holloway, Elizabeth Smart, Kaylee Anthony, Gabby Petito, but no one can name one person of color that has received that type of mainstream media. Not one person.
Reports show this bias is especially egregious for Indigenous people. In the state of Wyoming, where Gabby Petito disappeared, more than 700 Indigenous people have gone missing in the last decade, but none have received the same focus as her case.
It's been rather disheartening.
I like this one.
Patsy Whitefoot, whose sister Daisy Mae Heath has been missing for over 30 years, started her own podcast called War Cry to push for more resources and accountability in these cases.
There is never any communication, never any follow-up with families. So the whole justice system just needs to be turned upside down.
I mean, it's so troubling. It's so troubling on so many levels. Have there been any efforts at the federal level, maybe the state level, to address it?
Yeah, there have been some. Earlier this year, Minnesota passed a bill that creates a missing and murdered African-American women and girls task force. It will make recommendations for improving how the state handles these cases, and advocates are hoping bills like this spread nationwide.
You know, the detention on these cases sometimes does lead to a resolution. You know, it's almost, some of the police officers will say it's like a modern milk carton.
Yes. Yeah.
So you want that attention on these cases for as many people as you possibly can. Antonia, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Peacock.
We're so happy you're here, by the way.
I'm so happy to be here.
Welcome.
We heard that you met Al Roker when you were in third grade out there on the plaza, and look who's here.
The rumors are true.
Real? Yes.
Her aunt is used to work here at NBC, Soledad O'Brien. So,
The
lead was
there. Soledad's your aunt?
Yes.
Okay, by the way, also former Weekend Today anchor.
I almost said something, but I thought it was weird. I almost said you remind me so much of Soledad.
Really?
That was such a strange thing.
Wow.
Welcome.
Tell her we said hi.
Yeah. I will. I'm going to text her right after
I'm sure she'll see this.
Yeah, she better. All right.
I got it off the fact that she saw me when she was in third grade. Today's climate, we're talking about now Hurricane Sam. It is currently a Category 1 storm, 1,470 miles east-southeast of the northern leeway Leeward Islands. 75-mile-per-hour winds moving west at 15 miles per hour. It's going to be staying off the Leeward Islands, maybe threatening Bermuda sometime early next week. But the big deal is it's rapidly intensifying because it's moved through the second warmest eastern central Atlantic waters on record. And those warm waters are causing real intensification. Six of the last hurricanes we've had this season have rapidly intensified. Warmer waters providing fuel for stronger storms. Wetter hurricanes causing more extreme rainfall events. A rapidly intensifying storm means it gains 35 miles per hour in 24 hours. 79% of our major hurricanes are rapidly intensifying, and this is projected to happen more and more with a rapidly warming climate. And that's your latest weather, guys.
All right, Al, thank you. Coming up next, inside Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's high-profile trip here to New York and why it is being heavily scrutinized by the British press right after this.
Join me, Esther Perel, every Monday in my office on Where Should We Begin? I'm talking to couples and individuals about love and work, about turning conflict into connection. More than ever, our relationships define the quality of our lives. So let's explore the myriad of relational challenges together. See you Monday.
Well, we are back as Carson joins us with some very high-profile tourists paying a visit here to New York City.
That's right, guys. Good morning. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are in town here in New York, gearing up for a big event this weekend in Central Park. And NBC's Stephanie Goska is here with more on that. Morning, Steph.
Hey, Steph. Guys, good morning. Harry and Meghan are here to call for global COVID vaccine equity. It's their first public trip together since stepping away from their royal duties and moving to the U.S. in an effort to get some privacy. But some, especially in the British tabloids, who can be brutal, are skewering them and the trip, saying they're acting more royal than ever.
Harry and Meghan, all smiles in New York City.
It's wonderful to be back. Thank you.
Their first stop Thursday to One World Trade Center and the 9/11 Memorial, coming less than 2 weeks after the country marked the 20th anniversary of the attacks. Their appearance, similar to a trip Harry's grandmother, the Queen, made herself in 2010. But in the UK, the British tabloids are tough critics, accusing them of acting like royalty, even though they are no longer working royals. In an interview with Oprah in March, Harry explained the surprise decision to step away from the monarchy to escape the same intense media scrutiny he blamed for his mother Diana's death. Both Harry and Meghan have been to New York City before, but this marks their first official trip here together. This time, Harry spotted carrying a folder with Archie's papa emblazoned on it, a nod to his son, though children Archie and Lilibet are not with them on this trip.
The Princess of Wales flew in on the Concorde.
In 1989, Princess Diana also came to New York, mingling with the rich and famous and visiting the poor.
On a closed visit to the AIDS ward, the princess met and touched many of the children.
That trip has become a key storyline in the hit Netflix show, The Crown.
They desperately need foster parents, but people are too afraid to take them.
Why?
Because of the stigma.
On Saturday, Harry and Meghan will be front and center at Global Citizen Live in Central Park, urging vaccine equity around the world in an effort to help end the pandemic for everyone.
Meghan and Harry, at the end of the day, understand that they are public figures. They understand that anything they do is going to get attention. So they are now learning at this phase, it seems, how to use that public attention and direct it in very specific ways that they see fit and that things that they're very passionate about and causes that they want to support.
A little more, Meghan and Harry.
So Global Citizens Live is calling on the G7 nations to donate 1 billion vaccines to the world and to these countries that don't have enough vaccines. It's going to be quite a star-studded event. You've got J-Lo, Coldplay, Lizzo. Yeah.
Wow.
Lizzo.
Here in Central Park.
Yeah.
Coming up next, your 8 o'clock hour.